Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
Once upon a time, a soldier died, leaving a widow and one son. They were dreadfully poor, and at last matters became so bad that they had nothing left in the house to eat. "Mother," said the son, "give me 4 shillings, and I will go seek my fortune in the wide world." "Alas," answered the mother, "and where am I, who haven't a farthing wherewith to buy bread, to find 4 shillings? "There's that old coat of my father's," returned the lad. "Look in the pocket. Perchance there's something there." So she looked, and behold, there were 6 shillings hidden away at the very bottom of the pocket. "More than I bargained for," quoth the lad, laughing. "See, mother, these 2 shillings are for you. You can live on that till I return. The rest will pay my way until I find my fortune."
That was the opening of a fairy tale from India called Sir Buzz. My first reaction is, what? And then, huh.
Very astute.
Perhaps we'll make some sense of it here on Strange Studies of Strange Stories. I'm Chris Lackey.
And I'm Chad Pfeiffer. Thank you for joining us here on Patreon as we continue a month of fairy tale confusion. For example, I understand that Sir Buzz is a folktale from India, but I'm confused as to why it's not also a medieval-themed cocktail kiosk at the airport. You all sit at a round table, there's a bartender in the middle in a suit of armor. It's way too expensive to get drunk. It's Sir Buzz.
Yes.
But no, that's just the name of today's story, which, if you are consulting your wall chart at home, is classified in the Arne Thompson Uther Index as type 562, which is called The Spirit in the Blue Light. We're also going to discuss a variant of Sir Buzz from the Brothers Grimm called The Blue Light, all coming up on today's exciting episode. Speaking of excitement, who was today's reader?
That was our pal, Eric Peabody of Viking Guitar Productions. Eric is part of the team here on the podcast, and we're so grateful to have him working with us.
For any and all of your audio needs, whether it's narration, processing your audio to make it sound pristine, music production, or podcasting, Viking Guitar Productions is the way to go. Thank you so much, Eric. I initially found this tale type when I was looking for other fairy tales that involve soldiers, since that was our character from last week's story, the one that you picked, as well as last month's Slaughterhouse-5, and The Blue Light does have a soldier, but it was a Reddit user called OG Raincoat Killa who wrote a synopsis for The Blue Light, the Grimm story, that really caught my eye. "What would you do if a disgusting green witch dumped you down a well with a smokeless blue fire at the bottom, and when you use the fire to light up your crack pipe, a funny little goblin appeared and offered to do your bidding?" Well, that's very interesting. So
yeah.
Motivated by this question, I read The Blue Light in my Zipes, Grimm's Fairy Tales. But I also looked it up on the site of Professor D.L. Ashleman of the University of Pittsburgh, who has organized a lot of fairy tales and their variants by tale type. So you can look up the tale type and then read the versions from different countries. In fact, the versions that we've put in the show notes for today's show are from his site. I read a number of the variations of this story, and I decided we should lead with Sir Buzz from India, because we haven't done any Indian fairy tales as far as I can remember.
No.
But also, Sir Buzz has a number of fun quirks that are missing from The Blue Light, and let's just be honest, it has a vampire.
Yes.
Which I teased out on a prior episode.
The oldest English version of Sir Buzz that I could find is from a book called The Tales from the Punjab, Folklore of India, by Flora Annie Webster Steele, published in 1894. Steele was an English woman who married a member of the Indian Civil Service and lived in India from 1867 to 1889. She published an earlier version of the story in The Indian Antiquary in 1881 and noted that it was a Muslim story from the Punjab Kashmir region. The character's original name is Mia Bunga, which means Sir Beetle or Sir Bumblebee.
Sir Bumblebee. See, this is also in addition to our long history of werebee literature on the show.
Let's get into the story.
Let's do it.
As we heard at the top, we have a son of a soldier and his poor widowed mother. They have nothing, so the son sets out to find fortune for his mother and himself. Kind of a Jack and the Beanstalk sort of thing.
It also highlights how awesome it is to find money in an old jacket. I was curious about this soldier's son's math. He takes 4 shillings and leaves his mother with only 2. I know that he's going on the road, but he also has more of an opportunity to make a living. He's just leaving there, leaving her there with no support. One of the things about Sir Buzz that I felt was a little different from the other variations, and this is why I liked it. It's got a definite opinion about young people. And the opinion is that they're kind of stupid and easily distracted. I feel like this story was told by a parent with young adult children who was like frustrated by their choices. And you'll see what I mean as we go along. But flush with money from his dad's old coat, this kid heads out to make his fortune.
On his journey, the son runs into a tiger with a thorn in its paw. It begs the son to help, but he refuses, saying the tiger will kill him. In Indian mythology, were-tigers are pretty prevalent villains, and he has good reason to be suspicious of this. But despite that, his good nature takes over and he helps the tiger.
I've noticed over these couple of years that fairy tales are hungry things and they seem to gobble up other fairy tales. This is tale type 156, which is called Androcles and the Lion. Mm-hmm. People know this one. Person helps a fearsome beast remove a thorn from the paw and then the beast becomes a pal. This story is also called The Shepherd and the Lion in Aesop's Fables.
Yep.
Here's how the scene plays out in this story. The tiger's character says to the son, "Good lad, if you will take out this thorn for me, I shall be forever grateful." "Not I," answered the lad. "Why, if I begin to pull it out and it pains you, you will kill me with a pat of your paw." "No, no," cried the tigress. "I will turn my face to this tree, and when the pain comes, I will pat it." To this, the soldier's son agreed, so he pulled out the thorn, and when the pain came, the tigress gave the tree such a blow that the trunk split all to pieces. And that was a huge relief for me. I was a little tense in that moment because I thought we were going to get some of the scorpion and the frog.
Mm-hmm.
You know that one.
I do.
Scorpion asks a frog if it can ride the frog across a river, promises not to sting the frog, but then just does it anyway, even though it means they'll both drown. The scorpion says, "I'm sorry, it's just my nature." And you know what's odd about that, though, is that the scorpion and the frog is not one of Aesop's fables. That's actually kind of a recent story. It seems to have originated in Russia in the early 20th century, first appearing in a 1933 Russian novel, The German Quarter, by Lev Nitoberg, which refers to it as an Oriental fairy tale.
Hmm.
There is a precursor fable called The Scorpion and the Turtle, which appears in a number of Persian texts from the late 15th century. Big difference here, though, is that the scorpion tries to hit the turtle and it doesn't work because of the shell.
Ah, yes.
The scorpion didn't know any better. So the turtle is like, "What the heck, dude? Just keep swimming across the river." And then in some versions gets to the shore and whacks the scorpion. Right?
Whoa.
Shouldn't have done that. So the ancient Persian one and the recent Russian one, they both warn against trusting vicious people.
Mm-hmm.
The tigers say, "No, I won't hit you with my paw," but it could be lying in this story. But it's only in this modern version that the scorpion also destroys itself. It's irrationally self-destructive, and it's aware. It's aware. It says, "Nah, I can't help it. I'm vicious, and that means I hit myself, too." And I think that evolution shows how you can, how folktales can actually chart maybe a fundamental change in thought or awareness in humanity.
Yeah.
I don't know what it says about all of us, but I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not how it turned out here. It was to the kid's benefit.
Yes.
To trust the tigress.
I was.
She just wrecked a tree and stayed cool, I think.
The tiger gives the soldier's son a reward, a small box, but he is not to open it until he travels 9 miles. Mm-hmm. He agrees and is on his way.
Another fairy tale gobble here, where a boon is given, but the character has to exercise some level of faith for it to work. In the biblical story of Lot's wife, she's turned into a pillar of salt for looking back at the city of Sodom as she flees, disobeying a command from God. Kurt Vonnegut was talking about that in Slaughterhouse 5. The most familiar myth is, of course, Orpheus leading Eurydice out of the underworld, and he's warned not to look back and check if she's there, but of course he does, and as a result, he loses her forever. This is a really weird version of that setup with a different result.
As he walks, the box gets heavier and heavier until about 8.5 miles, and the son could barely hold onto it. He drops it to the ground and the box bursts open. Then a little man jumps out. This guy is very little. They say that he's a span high and his beard is longer at a span and a half. A span is about the length from the tip of your middle finger to the end of your thumb.
So it's basically a garden gnome.
Yeah, it is.
That's what I was thinking of.
This is, of course, Sir Buzz. He is angry and he's stomping around, mad that the son didn't carry him the whole 9 miles. It's unclear what would have happened if he actually did carry him the whole 9 miles.
We don't know for sure. Perhaps if you had carried it the full 9 miles, you might have found something better, Sir Buzz says. And that's it. I think he would have gotten at least a full-grown genie if he just waited that extra half mile. It took 8 miles to form the seed of this, and then he was really just growing in that last mile when he got impatient.
Could be.
This negotiated result, though, really surprised me. This would be like if Orpheus looked back 5 minutes in and Hades said, "Well, you screwed up, but there were 5 minutes where you weren't looking back, so I'm going to give you one of Eurydice's legs." You know, it's like a partial reward.
Yeah.
I actually think this is better for the theme that I'm finding in this. This seems like trying to talk to a young adult about delaying instant gratification.
Yeah.
Wait a little longer, save a little more, and you'll get something higher quality. I know you want it now. Or can't you just play the field a little more before you decide to marry this drummer who's living in his mom's basement? Wait two more years. You might get somebody a little more fully grown.
Yeah, true,
if you wait.
After his angry appearance, Sir Buzz settles down and says, well, you got close enough. I'm your servant now. Your wish is my command. And the story also bears a lot of similarities to Aladdin, which I thought was the same type of fairy tale, the 562.
Mm-hmm.
But you said at the top it was a different one, which is a man seeking his fortune encounters a supernatural being who gives him a magic item that grants him powers. The soldier in death, of course, falls into the same category.
According to my wall chart here, Aladdin is actually type 561. And there's a key difference in this story that earned it that next number, a key differentiator. But I don't want to spoil it, so we'll talk about it once we get through Sir Buzz.
Okay.
You're right that they are right next to each other. Tales 560 through 571 are all tales of magical objects. So all of those tales share basically the same inciting incident of a sort, you know, that this genie appears and gives a boon of some kind of magical item.
Right.
But then plot points are what differentiate them.
There is a technical paper that I try to read from the Royal Society of Open Science called Comparative Phylogenetic Analysis Uncover the Ancient Roots of Indo-European Folktales.
Was that just laying out at the dentist's office? How did you come across that?
No, I was looking for origins of folktales because Sir Buzz and the Blue Light are so very similar.
Yeah.
And so is the soldier in death. And I'm like, how can these be, you know, if this is from India, that's from another place, how can they be so similar? And then I found this article, but it is way over my head. This is a real academic paper. But what I could get out of it, and I think what it was saying is that these tales have the same origins, or like, I shouldn't say the same origins, but the same like ancestry. So they kind of track it back to the Middle East, but these tales, you know, and I'm talking like 2000 years ago, pre-Muslim Middle East, where they said that the stories spread out. And as they spread out and hit different cultures, there were elements that stuck and then elements that got changed to fit those specific cultures. So they share the same DNA. And I'm sure I'm oversimplifying it, but I think that is what the paper is saying. And if you're keen on that paper, we'll put a link to it in the show notes.
The clue is in that title that it's Indo-European folktales. That just made me think of, you know, the Indo-European family of languages is something like 42% of the world's languages fall under that category. And those are European languages as well as certain Southwest Asian and even in the Americans fall under that. And so you'll find commonalities and words between all those languages. And since there are commonalities in words, there's probably also commonalities in the oral tradition, you know, so that's that they all come from a seed of early prehistoric societies.
Yeah. And I think it's neat. Connects us all together.
It's really neat. Yeah.
But back to the story. The soldier's son is hungry, so he gives Sir Buzz what little money he has. And Sir Buzz zips off with a whiz, boom, bing, like a big bee.
A lot of cartoony whiz, bing, boom stuff when Sir Buzz pops around. But this whole interaction kind of puzzled me. Sir Buzz says, I can grant you a wish. And the son says, well, I'm really hungry. And then gives Sir Buzz all of his money to go get one meal, all 4 shillings. He only left his mother with 2 shillings to live indefinitely.
Yeah.
So it's really poor decision making. But luckily, Sir Buzz is a criminal. From a reader's perspective, this was my least favorite part of the story, but it is fun. Sir Buzz goes to the confectioner and he goes to the baker and they don't seem to see him because he's so small. He's behind other products in the store. They're like, who's that? Who's talking to me? Mm-hmm. So there's a long game of that, the comedy of which falls a little flat. But Sir Buzz makes himself seen eventually, then jingles the money in his pocket. So these service people step to, oh, he's got dough.
Uh-huh.
They give him whatever he wants. But then he gets the food and he ditches without paying.
He doesn't pay.
He uses his zing bang boom powers, which is one use for teleportation. I don't think we talked about when it came up recently.
Oh, right. No, we didn't. No,
committing petty crime.
Just crime. Yeah.
I wondered why he had to go shopping at all if he was a genie, you know. Can't he just conjure up food? Yeah.
Who knows? All of this stuff is a little wacky, and I'm sure it has some sort of reference to some other story or some cultural thing that we're just not privy to.
Yeah.
Sir Buzz comes back with the money and the food and makes a great meal for the son. He eats his fill, but then there's plenty of food left over, so Sir Buzz eats all the rest. The soldier's son and Sir Buzz travel for a while until they come to the king's city, where the king's daughter, Princess Blossom, lives. She's very slight, talking about her weight in flowers. Like, that's how they measure her weight, in petals of flowers.
Yeah.
Which is a common thing in Indian folklore. I think it's supposed to show that she is otherworldly and her beauty is transcend, so that she's lighter than air, so she's spiritual.
Like angelic. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It reads so weird, though. Princess Blossom was so lovely and tender and slim and fair that she only weighed 5 flowers. Every morning she was weighed on golden scales, and the scale always turned when the 5th flower was put in, neither less nor more. And I'm just, every day they do this? What happens? What if she's 6 flowers one day? Like, what does that mean? I'm just thinking.
Or 4.5 flowers. Is she in trouble? Does she need to eat more? What's the?
I want to know about the people who do that job. I want a story that's just about the people who have to get the scales out every day and weigh this woman. As a wise man once said, my first reaction is, what? And then, huh? You know what? I could buy everything else up until here. I could not suspend my disbelief on this one.
No, this was it. The son catches a glimpse of the princess and falls madly in love with her. At first, Sir Buzz tries to dissuade the son, but he can see that the boy loves her. So, bing, bang, boom, they whiz into her room at night.
It is an insane scene. Being nighttime, the princess was asleep. Nevertheless, the booming wakened her, and she was quite frightened to see a handsome young man kneeling beside her. She began, of course, to scream, but stopped at once when the soldier's son, with the greatest politeness and in the most elegant of language, begged her not to be alarmed. And after that, they talked together about everything delightful, while Sir Buzz stood at the door and did sentry. But he stood a brick up on end first, so that he might not seem to pry upon the young people. It says, so that he might not seem to pry. He was definitely prying.
He was prying.
But, yeah. He was polite. That's what made her cool with the home invasion.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I didn't knock. I said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I didn't let you know before I came in.
It says that the two young people talked all night, but I'm guessing that's code for something else.
Yes.
When morning comes, Sir Buzz has to wake the sun, but then decides to zip both the sun and the princess to a garden outside of town.
They're sleeping so soundly, he just doesn't want to bother them.
No.
But he knows also they'll get in trouble if they're caught together. So his solution, teleport away with the entire bed to a garden so they can keep sleeping.
The king is upset that his daughter has been taken and sends out guards to find them. Sir Buzz uses a tree to hide them, but that doesn't work for too long. And Sir Buzz has to zip them away again.
The tree. Mm-hmm. He rips the tree out of the ground and uses it as a weapon. There's some like anime level stuff going on here. It's crazy. In the garden, he set the bed down in the shade of the biggest tree and, pulling up the next biggest one by its roots, threw it over his shoulder and marched up and down, keeping guard. This was so awesome because one guard goes out there looking for where they might have gone. Uh-huh. And Buzz like harries him with the tree. But of course, he can't see the little guy. So he gets back to the king and he goes, Your Majesty, I am convinced Your Majesty's daughter, the Princess Blossom, is in Your Majesty's garden just outside the town, as there is a tree which fights there terribly. I don't know how that indicates that she's there, but
yeah,
he got attacked by a sentient tree and said that must be where the princess is.
That's the way he sees it.
Well, then some literal killing happens. It says, upon this, the king summoned all his horses and men and, going to the garden, tried to get in. But Sir Buzz, behind the tree, routed them all. For half were killed, and the rest ran away. The noise of the battle, however, awoke the young couple. And as they were now convinced they could no longer exist apart, they determined to fly together. So when the fight was over, the soldier's son, the Princess Blossom, and Sir Buzz set out to see the world. You would think that when the young man woke up, hey, you could have just gotten me up 5 minutes earlier. You didn't have to kill all of those innocent king's men.
No. But, I think this is also a way to show how powerful Sir Buzz is, that he can just rock like an army of guys, basically, on his own.
It worked.
Now that he has some scratch and the princess, the soldier's son tells Sir Buzz that he's happy and no longer needs him. Sir Buzz gives him a strand of his hair from his beard and says, if you ever need me, just burn this hair and I'll come a-running.
I don't know why they would ever get rid of him. I mean, he stands a brick up, so you don't have to see him creeping, but...
But he's still peeking, and if that's not your thing...
That's true. Well, he's sent off back to the Tigris, I assume, while they move on with their life.
I guess so. The soldier son and the princess travel and have a nice time until they get lost in the jungle.
It's pretty nonspecific how long it took for this to happen. You could imagine they went all over the place, but I think they had a little honeymoon period of like a day or two and then got lost. Things just went bad immediately.
They find a Brahmin, which is like a priest, who says that he'll help them and takes them back to his place. Thing is, this priest is not really a priest. He is actually a vampire, as you said at the top. He wants to drink their blood.
Or more than that, I think this is a flesh-eating vampire, perhaps.
Ooh, nice. When they get to the place, the vampire says, "Here are the keys to my cupboards. Look through and have whatever you want to eat, but don't open the one with a golden key. I'm off to collect some firewood." After the vampire leaves, they see that he has all this food and riches in his cupboards. But of course, curiosity gets the best of them, and they open up the golden cupboard.
So he opened it, and lo, it was full of human skulls, picked quite clean and beautifully polished. At this dreadful sight, the soldier's son flew back to the Princess Blossom and said, "We are lost! We are lost! This is no Brahmin, but a horrid vampire!" At that moment, they heard him at the door, and the princess, who was very brave and kept her wits about her, had barely time to thrust the magic hair into the fire before the vampire, with sharp teeth and fierce eyes, appeared. But at the selfsame moment, a boom, boom, binging noise was heard in the air, coming nearer and nearer.
Ha-ha! We had like kind of a Bluebeard moment there, with the one cabin you're not supposed to look into, and it's got messed up stuff in it.
Exactly. And the messed up stuff are trophies of some kind.
Yeah.
Here again, you see that impatience or lack of faith. However, interesting, in this moment, that's what saved them.
Yes.
The flaw was a strength. The soldier's son being impatient or curious was why Sir Buzz was malformed, but that same quality allowed Princess Blossom the time she needed to burn the hair in the fire and summon Sir Buzz for help. And that's what makes this tale type 562, bro.
Okay.
Magic object saves person from execution. That's the thing it has to do. Everything's the same as Aladdin, except this last minute rescue element. That's what sets it apart. Tale type. In the Aladdin 561 tale type, this same beat is magic object recovered by using second magic object. This leads to another cool fairy tale trope. The vampire, when he hears the bing, bang, zing, apparently knows that Sir Buzz is on the way. Sir Buzz is known to vampires, apparently, but the vampire has a strategy.
Yeah, we get a wizard's shape-shifting duel kind of thing, which I remember from The Sword and the Stone. The vampire turns into rain, so Sir Buzz turns into a strong wind that bashes the rain. The vampire then turns into a dove, but Sir Buzz turns into a hawk. The dove turns into a rose that drops on the king's lap, who happens to be listening to dancing girls singing. Sir Buzz turns into a musician and does this awesome sitar solo, and the king just digs it. He loves it so much. And Sir Buzz goes, "You know what? Since you love it so much, I only ask for one thing. That rose is a gift." The king's like, "I didn't even know that was there. So yeah, sure."
It just fell into my lap. Okay. Yeah.
But before he's able to hand it over, a petal falls off and turns into a mouse. Sir Buzz turns into a cat and then eats the mouse / vampire.
The eater has become the eaten.
Sir Buzz comes back to the vampire's place to find the soldier's son and the princess are all scared and cold. Sir Buzz says, "I have to take you two home. You aren't fit to take care of yourselves."
Then he gathered together all the jewels and gold in one hand, placed the princess and the soldier's son in the other, and whizzed away home to where the poor mother, who all this time had been living on the 2 shillings, was delighted to see them. Then, with a louder boom, bing, boom than usual, Sir Buzz, without even waiting for thanks, whizzed out of sight and was never seen or heard of again. But the soldier's son and the Princess Blossom lived happily ever after.
You were saying that the bing, bang, boom thing, well, you're saying it was teleportation, but I think he has super speed.
You're right, it's super speed. I think the key phrase at the end of that one, before we get into the next story, was,
"Oh, sure.
I have to take you two home. You aren't fit to take care of yourself." And I think this story is almost like Rumspringa among the Amish, or it's a more common thing than that. Kids get a little independence. It's usually around the time teenagers get their driver's licenses.
Sure.
And then start doing some test runs in the world. Usually the conclusion is, you got to go back in the oven and bake a little longer. You got some valuable experience when you drove to the amusement park and wrecked the car and got a ticket, but now you got to go home.
Yep.
You got to think about what happened a little bit. So I thought this story had a lot of that in it, which was amusing to me.
I don't want to get too deep into this one, but I want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Blue Light, this is, as you said, from the Brothers Grimm collection. It's similar to Sir Buzz, but it's got some interesting differences.
Once upon a time, there was a soldier who had served the king loyally for many long years. When the war was over and the soldier could no longer serve because of the many wounds he had received, the king said to him, "You can go home now. I no longer need you. There will be no more money for you because wages are only for those who earn them."
It's very similar to the soldier in Death.
A mistreated veteran. He received non-specific injuries because of the war, and now the king is saying that he's useless because of those injuries. Quite a different protagonist. Here we have somebody who's starting in a mistreated place and is probably pretty angry as a result.
And different than the soldier in Death, who was a pretty optimistic guy. This guy's kind of pissed.
Rightly so.
Yeah, of course. He's wandering at night, and he sees light from a cabin, and there he finds a witch. She tells him that she'll give him room and board if he digs up her garden the next day. He agrees. The next day, he works all day, but he doesn't quite get the job done. So she says, "Look, you could stay another day if you chop the wood for me the next day."
It is felt a little like Vasilisa the Fair, where the witch is a bad boss for part of the tale.
Mm-hmm. He works all day on the wood chopping, but can't get the task done in time. And she says, "Look, you could stay again if tomorrow you go to my dry well and get my magic blue light that I dropped down there. It never goes out and it's blue. It's awesome." He agrees. The next day, she lowers him into the well, and he gets the light, but when she pulls him back up, she doesn't bring him all the way up, and she asks for the light, you know, to hand it up, and he's like, "Oh, I think this is a trick."
Yeah, it's the old throw me the idol, throw me the whip situation, but
he
holds the blue light back from her as she grabs for it, and that frustrates the witch.
So she lets go of the rope and traps him in the well.
She just gives up on a pretty powerful magical relic. I was like, is this witch depressed? We never find out.
The soldier figures that he's going to die down there, so he decides to have one last smoke of his pipe, and he uses that blue light to light his pipe. Out of the smoke of his pipe comes a little black dwarf. We have another your wish is my command situation, and the soldier is very keen on this. First, get me out of the well. The dwarf shows him a hidden tunnel in the well that the witch has been storing all of her treasures. The soldier takes as much as he can carry. Once out of the tunnel and back on the surface, he tells the dwarf to blind the witch and then to take her to the judges.
Not long afterwards, she came riding by on a tomcat as fast as the wind and screaming horribly. And not long after that, the dwarf was back. "It's all taken care of," he said. "The witch is hanging on the gallows. Master, what do you command now?"
Damn! This is not a nice soldier at all. This guy is cutthroat.
Bad day to be a lazy witch.
The soldier tells the dwarf that he's free to go, and the dwarf tells him to light his pipe with a blue light if he ever needs him. And that's, again, very similar to Sir Buzz. Soldier goes to an inn and lives the high life for a bit, but then calls the dwarf back and says, "The king dissed me and I want revenge." He tells the dwarf, "Late at night, get the king's daughter and bring her to me. I want her to do maid service for me." Again, I think this is some softening of the story here.
I'm sure it depends on the teller of the story what happens here. I didn't like where it was going, but it didn't go as blue as I expected it to go.
No. The dwarf zips off to get her and then zips back to the inn. And again, very much like Sir Buzz, he zips.
Yeah.
He zips around.
Mm-hmm.
She spends all night cleaning the stuff, and then the dwarf takes her back to the palace before sunrise. The princess tells her father, the king, about this crazy dream she had last night. She feels so tired that she feels like maybe she actually did do all of those things. Thinking that she might be right, he tells the princess to go to bed with her pockets full of peas. They will fall out and leave a trail if this dwarf is zipping you around. Of course, the dwarf is eavesdropping on this combo and has a counter move.
This gobbled up a little Hansel and Gretel there with the trail of peas is sort of the trail of breadcrumbs idea.
That night, the dwarf snatches the princess, but he is prepared because he has covered the whole city with peas.
So the peas fall out of her pocket, but it doesn't matter. The next day, the townspeople are like, "Whoa, it rained peas overnight." Oh, well, they just start collecting the peas. They're very nonchalant about it.
You can't look free peas in the mouth, you know?
Not in the mouth.
The next day, the king tells the princess to go to bed with her shoes on. And when you get where you're going, leave a shoe and we'll find it the next day. The dwarf, still dropping eaves on this, he doesn't have a plan. This one stumps him. So he just tells the soldier, "Look, don't bring the princess to clean up your place again because he's going to get you."
A lot of people just giving up in this story. I can't fight against a shoe hiding plot. It's too hard.
The soldier doesn't listen and the princess is brought over to clean his pad once more. The princess is able to leave her shoe. And again, why didn't they just check for shoes?
Do you have two shoes on? You can't leave until you do.
The next morning, the king's men search the whole city, find the soldier with the princess's shoe, and arrest him. Unfortunately, he is taken before he can grab the blue light and his gold. From his prison cell window, he sees one of his old comrades in arms walk by, and he goes, "Hey, could you go to the inn and get my stuff? I'll give you some money." And he does. The king sentences the soldier to death, but the soldier wants to make one last request, a smoke from my pipe. And the king says, "You can have three."
Then the soldier pulled out his pipe and lit it with the blue light. As soon as a few rings of smoke had risen, the dwarf was standing there. He had a cudgel in his hand and said, "What does my master command?" "Strike the false judges and their henchmen to the ground for me. And don't spare the king either, who has treated me so badly." Then the dwarf took off like lightning, zip-zap, back and forth, and everyone he even touched with his cudgel fell to the ground and did not dare to move. The king became afraid, and in order to save his life, he gave to the soldier his kingdom as well as his daughter for a wife.
False judges? He did kidnap the princess.
Right.
He did that crime. So the judges were just doing what they were supposed to be doing. I get the revenge on the king. I mean, this really is a revenge fantasy, this story.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Which is not a bad thing, necessarily.
No, I think it satisfies folks who feel they've been mistreated by higher powers. And the judges are part of the establishment, so they're punished for that. I think it also teaches the valuable lesson that smoking is good for you.
There are other stories similar to this. There's one called The Deserter in the Tinderbox, pretty much the blue light, but instead of a dwarf, it's three magic dogs with huge eyes, eyes the size of fists, very bizarre. He doesn't have her clean, but he does have sex with her. At the end, he has the dogs kill 300 soldiers, and the deserter marries the princess and becomes king.
The Tinderbox by Hans Christian Andersen is a telling of that version.
Oh, then there's the Iron Man, where the soldier is crippled from war injuries like the blue light, and the king does nothing to help him. He befriends a charcoal burner, and they live happily for a while, like a couple. But the coal burner says that there is a well that has some magic thing in it. "I'll lower you down, and you can get it, and we'll have a great life, the two of us."
Mm-hmm.
In the well, there's all this treasure, including a magic candelabra, and the Iron Man is in there. It's a dude made of iron, just sits there while the soldier takes all the stuff. The next day, the coal burner is dead. No explanation why he died.
Yeah.
I thought it was a curse or something, but I don't think it is. I think he just happened to die. The Iron Man then shows up to do his bidding because he lights the candles. Then we get all the stuff with the princess again, same stuff. He's captured because she left a ring and not a shoe. The soldier makes a final request to light the candle, and the Iron Man kills everyone, not just part of the army. He kills everybody but the king.
Wow.
And the king is made to let the soldier marry his daughter and become king himself. So, again, lots of versions of the story.
I do like a good Iron Man, but I'm going to say I like the tale best with a vampire in it.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's just another name for the witch in the woods. And the theme about the kids being stupid rang true, so I enjoyed Sir Buzz the best.
Sir Buzz is my favorite, yeah.
Well, that's all we have for this tale type this week. We're going to be back with a legendary story next week, which is
Beauty and the Beast.
I'm really excited about that. And then for our extra credit, we're going to talk about some of the film versions of Beauty and the Beast, the Cocteau black and white film.
Yes.
We'll talk a little about the Disney film, and then we'll see if we can find... There are many, many examples of crazy film treatments of that story. So we're going to talk about all that business on our extra credit. I wanted to mention before we go... The Smith Circle, a Clark Ashton Smith conference, is going to be held January 10th of 2026, the Saturday before Smith's 133rd birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So folks are interested and can get up to California for that. It's going to be held in Smith's hometown, Auburn, California. It's a one-day ticketed event. It will start at 10 a.m. on January 10th. It'll be held at the historic Auburn Carnegie Library that Smith used himself. There's going to be five discussion panels with a range of guests, including S.T. Joshi and Cody Goodfellow. And there's also going to be an exhibit of Smith's art and books, a self-guided tour of key Smithian sites around Auburn. There'll be an event scheduled for more information on the site, thesmithcircle.net. We will link out in the show notes. Just wanted to get a word out about that really cool conference.
And I'd like to thank Eric Peabody of Viking Guitar Productions.
He's a genie. He is Sir Buzz. That's why we had to have him for this story.
Yep. Also, I'd like to thank some patrons. Darcy Chin, thank you.
Eric Dodd, thank you so much.
Mark Simmons, thank you.
Bloodsvor, thank you.
Professor Radigan, thank you.
Charlotte Groombridge, thank you so much.
I'd like to thank Ola R.
Rob Valentine, thank you so much.
I'd like to thank Felix H.
And finally, Tommy Preston Shock. Thank you so much for your support. We're going to be back next week with Beauty and the Beast, the story. Until then, I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to Strange Studies, a Strange Stories.
Exclusively on Patreon.